Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Welcome to the HR Power Hour, and you're listening to David Chulo talk about educational HR radio. We are presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, and Jim Breedy is our guest today. Jim has been on, I don't know. How many times have you been on? A lot. Let's just say that.
Let's just say that.
And we appreciate you every time coming on. He is, of course, a partner with Sheehan Finney and an appointment attorney, and we are really going to be talking about a hot topic today, something that everybody is dealing with and employers are trying to, you know, figure out, to be honest with you, and that's how our employees in it for the long haul, accommodating considerations for employees with long COVID. Jim, before we start, tell me about a little bit where we are today. Kind of set the stage for me before we get into the, you know, all the discussions about this.
Yeah. So hopefully we are, David, in what is referred to a post-pandemic period. And so what that means is the public health emergency that was declared in the U.S. a couple of years ago is going to expire in May. And so it's been a long 3 years. And with that, we've been through many different sort of iterations of this virus, this mutations of this virus. Sadly, you know, the numbers are, you know, in the hundreds of millions of people that were infected. We know about the hospitalizations and also tragically the deaths associated with COVID. So where we are now is, I can't think of off the top of my head the most recent mutation of the virus. But trying to catch up with vaccines and therapeutics and the like, you know, thankfully, the numbers have come down significantly. But that still means that COVID is still with us because of the mutations. And that's sort of where we are at this point. And so where we also are is the newly discovered, in the last year or so, condition known as long COVID. And that's what we're talking about today, because I think that is going to be with us because of the adverse impact upon our health and our bodies. It could be with us for a long time. And therefore, what do employers do in response to an employee with long COVID?
What are some of the stats behind this? You know, how many people are we dealing with in terms of at least what we're hearing from a statistical standpoint?
Well, you know, of the those who tested positive for COVID, and remember, many people have had multiple infections, meaning they had COVID, they got over COVID, they got it again, and so on. And that could have been attributable to the rebound effect from therapeutics, but also could also be that they got one of the variants. But with that, of the number of people that have had tested positive for COVID, 60% have said that they have what is described as, which we'll talk about in a minute, long COVID symptoms. That number, if you look at that, is anywhere from 16 million to as many as 35 million Americans could have long COVID. And what does that mean? That could mean that obviously loss of productivity, lost wages, people out of work, and so on.
Yeah, it's also the mental compartment of this, the stress that it puts on others who are dealing with this, families that have an impact for employees at work. There's a hidden side of this as well, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think you also just touched upon something that's often overlooked, and that is not just the physical impact of the virus, but the virus also has mental impairment manifestations as well. So one for the person who's suffering with the virus, and that mental impairment could be anywhere from anxiety, depression, or a brain fog. All too often we focus on the physical manifestations and what that means, fever, body aches, cough, and so on. But I think the other issue is, what are we talking about for the the concentric circles around the employee, those that are impacted, coworkers, family members, and so on. I think, and the burden on our healthcare system. But, you know, as many as 4 million Americans are projected to be out of work due to COVID. You know, and David, you know this better than most, just the low labor participation rates, the low unemployment rates, and the number of job vacancies out there. And yet on top of that, it's almost like, you know, what would they say if, you know, how much would you pay for, you know, wait, there's still more in a late night Ronco commercial. I think that's sort of where we are with this. But the annual cost of wages alone, lost wages alone with long COVID for people missing work could be as much as $170 billion per year and potentially as high as $230 billion per year. This is an economy that's still reeling from a pandemic, and then you add that on top of it.
Well, and then you add on inflation, and you know that's another component of any work atmosphere. Well, what does it cost to keep, retain talent? You know, employers, I think you and I both know employers care about their employees. All right, so most employees care. I'm in the 99% category. I believe most want to do the right thing. But they still have to get work done. They still have to open the doors. They still have to produce the widgets or provide the service. And it is putting stress on them as owners, stress on the management, stress on the employees, stress on the any line worker that's out there. And so this always becomes bigger when you're talking about something that's long-term. It's like any disability. Somebody can't be at their best, can't be at their peak. And how are we going to deal with that as an employer?
Yeah, and that really is ultimately the issue. And you're right, it gets to the core analysis that most employers would be familiar with, meaning most employers with 15 or more employees covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act would be familiar with that sort of interactive process back and forth with the employee's healthcare provider about, okay, here are the essential functions of the job. What do you need, if anything, to do to perform the job? Not some, not most, but all essential functions of the job. And what's the duration of this these proposed accommodations? So it's that back and forth. But the issue that we're going to have to deal with going forward is, what if they don't know? Meaning, what if the healthcare professionals don't know how long this long COVID is going to continue? Because it could be a few days, a few weeks, a few months. On average, it's at least 3 months that someone suffers with long COVID. But who knows? It could be much longer, because this virus impacts every person differently.
That's the biggest challenge, is it isn't as simple as, you know, you got the flu, you know, it's going to be a stomach flu, you know, it's going to take 48, 72 hours, and then you move through and you move on. And it's not even like breaking a limb or dealing with something like that. You know, it's going to heal, you'll be back at whatever capacity that is. This has a real physical and mental impairment issue. And you've talked about it, from neurological to respiratory to cardiovascular, circulatory to mental, emotional. All those things are a big piece of what's going on here. Jim, from an employer standpoint, how do they, as we go through this program, how do they guard themselves about making sure it's real?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, right? Or in today's dollars, the billion-dollar question. I think the answer is talking with your employees. And as you said, you spend a lot of time recruiting and retaining workers, and you want to make certain you certainly value them, at least to some extent, right? And so if someone says, I can't come in today, well, you're always going to say, you know, what's going on, and like any illness and so on, or any challenge the person may have outside of work. But if it gets to be a chronic problem or one that's truly interfering with work, you're going to ask some questions like, you know, what's going on here? And whether it's under your sick leave policy, your PTO policy, your FMLA policy, your paid family leave policy, whatever it is. And if the person tells it, if it's workers' comp, if it's, which is entirely possible, we can talk about that in a minute, or if it's just short-term disability, long-term disability, or I just need an accommodation, it's having a conversation. And potentially, certainly, information shared from that person's healthcare provider, and possibly you sending that employee for an independent medical exam. But all this stuff is the exchange of information. What does this mean? What do you need? Can we afford it? Can we accommodate it? And for how long?
Yeah, and that's, you know, in fact, this is really no different than any other issue. And I think that's the point, right? Is that while it does have certain uniqueness to it, HR professionals, leaders need to think about it in the same way they think about other things, you know, and dealing with them in that way. We'll talk more about that, obviously, as we go through the process today. Of course, we're talking with Jim Reedy. He is a partner with Sheehan Finney. And of course, we are listening to the HR Power Hour. I'm your host, David Chulo. And of course, we're podcasts on all major podcast channels and on hrpowerhour.com, where you can check us out and be educated. So let's talk a little bit about the symptoms, Jim. You know, what if somebody is having these symptoms? I mean, you can go through them, and maybe they don't even know they have long COVID. Maybe they're, you know, maybe they're showing some of these. How does an employer deal with these situations?
Well, so, you know, the most common physical symptoms would be persistent fatigue. And, you know, if you're a young parent, if you're an older person, you might have fatigue anyway, right? Shortness of breath, muscle aches, sporadic fevers, headache. You know, a lot of people get headaches either allergy-based or just getting ready for work on Sunday afternoon thinking about Monday. Or perhaps they've done a little bit too much of enjoying an adult beverage the night before. They've got a headache. Dizziness on standing could be something else. Going on, heart palpitations, chest pain, cough, other fevers, and loss of taste and smell. Growing up in my household, that would have helped because my mother was a wonderful person, but a terrible cook. And then the mental symptoms could be, as again, concentration or brain fog, anxiety, and depression. Now, as you said, David, I think the issue there is, but is that because of long COVID, or do I have a cold? Do I have the flu? Do I have some sort of systemic problem with my cardiovascular system, my respiratory system? Do I have disease or impairment? Or could this be something that's organic within me, whether it's depression or anxiety or environmental? And that's the big question, which is one, having the individual, the patient, identify what it is. Two, having their healthcare provider identify what it is, making some causal connection to the original virus or any subsequent infection. And then how do we treat this, and what do you need so you can perform your job? This gets to the employer issue.
You know, this always becomes the question of how long could these issues continue? Of course, that leads into how long should we deal with them? You know, there's a lot of questions. So let's start with the simple answer, the simple question of how long do these issues typically persist? Or as you may say, it depends, like any good attorney, right?
Absolutely. They teach us the first day of law school. That's the best answer. It depends, but it truly does depend, because our bodies are, wonderful creations. But in many ways, we have our bodies are designed, one, to identify illness, and two, to attack. That's what a fever is. It attacks the illness. We do have these wonderful healing properties. So in that regard, somebody who's otherwise in good health may have a situation where either they don't know they have COVID or the COVID-like symptoms, long COVID, or it could pass very quickly. So it could be a matter of days, if they even notice at all, or weeks, months, or more. But the average from the CDC reports on this is at least 3 months.
I think about from the standpoint of the employees around this person, if they can't be remote, let's say the job is a non-remote job. And, you know, there is this, I'll call it unconscious perception today that if you're coughing, right, it's not just a cough. Oh, like, what do you have? And there's a lot of concern in the workplace, more than there probably ever has been. You know, we used to cough and sneeze and have the cold and flu and go to work and do our thing. Jim, I'm sure you've done that. We've all done that. But now there's a little fear, and I'm not sure that's a real factor. And so how should employers deal with that?
Well, I mean, I think that HR professionals, truly, of the people, apart from first responders, meaning healthcare professionals, police, fire, EMTs, and so on, I think HR professionals are right up there in having to deal with this pandemic. And what I mean by that is, how many HR professionals prior to COVID were comfortable asking about someone's healthcare condition, were comfortable asking or noticing a cough, a sneeze, someone who looked feverish and so on. And one, not only insisting that they go home or not come in, but then insisting upon a period of isolation or quarantine, and then having follow-up medical appointments and getting some proof of clearance to return to work. Masking, of course, was a big issue, or otherwise one-way corridors, one-way bathrooms, and then the testing, the questions you would ask before you attend. Have you had a fever? Have you been exposed to? Do you have any symptoms of? How many HR professionals were equipped to deal with that beforehand? On top of all the many other things that they deal with, they had to do these things. And you and I both know, and in fact, I'm sure the audience does as well, the resistance you got from people. How dare you ask me? Why do I have to wear a mask? You thought I was coughing. Why don't you deal with so-and-so? Or more importantly, the people turning in their coworkers and so on. So while a lot of that has passed because we're through the worst of that part of the pandemic, now we have that residual issues with regard to while we're getting back to work and people are unmasked generally and so on. How do we deal with the medical inquiries? So now it's transitioned to the issues of if the individual says, I need to be out because of the HR professional then asking the questions of, okay, what does that mean? And having some information exchange with a healthcare professional along with the employee. The benefit of the last 3 years slogging away at all those healthcare issues is HR professionals are better equipped now and more comfortable asking those questions than ever before.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, HR Educational Radio, and we will be right back. You are on WLOB 100.5 FM. Thank you for being here.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clough, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HRPower.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and today we're talking about long COVID. Are we ready for the implications of it in the workplace? Jim, we've talked about the workplace implication of long COVID, and they are tardiness, absenteeism, performance issues, leave requests, accommodations, undue hardships. And you mentioned right before the break about the fact that HR professionals, absolutely true, have become really adept to asking questions about health and asking questions the right way and making people feel more comfortable. However, the real question is, in May of this year, supposedly, the end of the emergency, which is, you know, allowed us to ask questions like about your health care and about all these things, OSHA head regulations, all that, is going to come to an end. Do employers need to be careful or aware of changes now when it ends to their ability to ask some of these health questions? Because I think it's a legitimate question.
Oh, it absolutely is a legitimate question. And, you know, I think, again, HR professionals were very good at following CDC and HHS guidance in the last couple of years. And so what this public health emergency expiring May 1st means is that it gets to funding, it gets to certain powers of the government and so on. But before COVID, going back to the big early days of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which was amended in the 2008-2009, can HR professionals ask certain questions? The answer is yes. However, they have to treat this as a confidential medical record, which is on a need-to-know basis. So what does that mean in the workplace? If you're asking about, you know, I need to ask you, you claim you have these issues attributable to long COVID and it impacts your ability to perform the job. What does that mean? And we may need to get some additional information from your healthcare professional. Now, how is that kept? It's kept in a segregated personnel file and it's on a need-to-know basis. But what does that mean? Well, that means that the HR professional is going to know. They're going to be asking questions. They're going to seek the consent of the employee sharing that information or getting information from the employee's healthcare provider. And this is kind of important, just like before COVID, it may also be shared with the employee's supervisor or manager. Why? For purposes of, one, figuring out the accommodation process, and two, potentially first aid. Why do I mention that? Because if we're talking about what long COVID could impact, it could be lung function, heart damage, kidney damage, neurological damage, circulatory issues, and mental health issues. So if there is an issue in the workplace, the manager or supervisor and or safety personnel in the organization would also be in on this information. However, they all have to treat it as confidential medical information.
You mean
you don't go out on the workforce and say, by the way, Mary has long COVID, just to be clear here.
Yeah, no, I don't recommend that either. Do you expect the CDC to come out with new guidelines once the emergency is lifted?
Yeah, I do, yes. I mean, the CDC, what they do is they alert us to public health issues. And, you know, they were in particularly good and seemed like on a daily basis we got new guidance from the CDC. Yes, I think we'll continue to get guidance from them, especially with regard to long COVID and what that means. You'll likely get more information with regard to the efficacy of vaccines and so on. So yes, I think we'll continue to see that for some time.
Speaking about vaccines, just because I think it's important when it comes to this, can employers still continue to require a mandate that a vaccine be taken for them to work at the employer? Though I must confess, most of the employers are starting to lift all those. But
yeah,
question has come up.
EEOC came out early on when the first vaccines were rolled out, first Pfizer and then Moderna and so on. And the EEOC came out with that guidance, I think that was in December of 2020, and said, if it is job-related, meaning a vaccine mandate, job-related and consistent with business necessity. However, they didn't then explain further. Okay, what does that mean? Does that mean just healthcare employers? Does that mean just those that are first responders and so on? So a lot of employers were left scrambling in that regard. So what could it be? It could certainly be a hospital, because hospitals and clinics like that have policies mostly under state law with regard to MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella, and flu vaccines, and a requirement in certain clinical positions. It could be first response. It could be nursing homes. So if it is job-related, meaning that individual's particular job, and consistent with the business necessity of that, whatever the organization is, yes. But you're right. Largely, vaccine mandates have gone the way of the dodo bird. I mean, it's you just don't see them except in these very specific instances. In fact, I most recently, I think, challenged for public sector employers and the military and law enforcement. You're seeing those go away.
Yeah, no, it's no question. The same thing with face masking and all the other stuff that's gone away. So what does this mean for employers, Jim? Really, in the end, we've got, you know, FMLA, ADA considerations. There were others. Talk to us a little bit about what employers should do now as we face this issue of long COVID.
Yeah. So, again, it depends upon the individual. It depends upon the individual's job, the employer. But we're talking about things like tardiness, absenteeism, performance issues, leave requests, accommodations. And are those accommodations reasonable, or do they represent either a direct threat or undue hardship? So what does it mean for employers? Well, most employers have sick leave policies or PTO policies. Most employers have, for those that have got 50 or more employees, you've got federal Family Medical Leave Act. For those that have 15 or more employees, you're covered by federal disability law, the Americans with Disabilities Act. You might have state law issues as well. You also may have paid sick leave, paid family leave issues, because what if you're not caring for yourself, you're caring for a family member? Do you have, is there a leave policy associated with that? So the important thing there is not having if you're not showing up, you're out of a job. It's having that understanding of, okay, how do we apply whatever this is and however it impacts the workplace to our policies? And I think you said it earlier, David. Really is, in many regards, if the recently there have been cases that have identified or confirmed that long COVID could be a disability. If long COVID is a disability, that's the first part of the ADA analysis. And that is it a physical or mental impairment that interferes with a major life activity? That's the first part of the analysis. The second part is the person a qualified individual with a disability? Meaning, can they perform all the essential functions of the job with some sort of a reasonable accommodation? And then the reasonable accommodation is, it's reasonable unless it's not, and it's not if it's a direct threat, meaning an immediate direct threat of the health to the employee or a coworker, or an undue burden or undue hardship, which is you factor in the cost and effect upon the organization, not just a mere inconvenience, but a serious impact upon the organization. That's the ADA analysis. The FMLA is a little bit different, and it's an awkward intersection. Is whatever this condition is, does it represent a serious health condition? Meaning, am I under the care of a physician on a regular basis, or have I been hospitalized for at least 3 days? So they don't match up exactly, but there is that they could run parallel for a period of time, and you might have 12 weeks of FMLA followed by a period of ADA accommodation afterwards.
You know, this really means that employers need to look at their policies as well, right? Because they may have to adapt, or they may have to make sure that they're following all these policies that go with COBRA and, sick leave and long-term disability. It's a good time to review them. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. And I think the other part of it is the kind of communication between the HR professional and the C-suite. You know, there was an article, David, I think you and I talked about it before, with regard to remote workers and the pushback from the C-suite. And there was a survey done. I'm not certain what publication. It could have been Fast Company or one of these, that said that more than 60% of CEOs surveyed felt that remote workers were slackers and they lacked hustle. And of course, there's that pressure to get people back to the workplace to fill commercial space, and, you know, slowly getting people back to the office at least 3 to 4 days a week, all this empty commercial space. Well, I think similarly, you might have, if someone is not showing up before because of long COVID or other issues, you might get that knee-jerk reaction thinking, look, all hands on deck, and if you can't show up, you're out. And I think that the challenge for HR professionals is, well, slow your roll here a little bit. We need to go through our policies and our analysis as to what this means and, whether or not we can accommodate it. And I think that that's important, but I think you're right. Let's take a look at our policies. And if our policies evolve as the virus evolved, as the law evolved, and as the guidance evolved.
You know, it's funny you just talk about the work from home. There was an article that came out, work from home era ends for millions of America. This was in the Wall Street Journal. And this came out just back in like the last week of March of 2023. And it really talks about the fact that remote working is becoming increasingly rare, that now 72.5% of businesses established say their employees telework rarely or not at all. And that is completely up from 60.1% in 2021. You know, remote work, and there was an article in LinkedIn, and I couldn't tell you the exact quote on that, but it was something about the fact that the amount of remote work jobs on LinkedIn and on Indeed have dropped by almost 70%. And so, you know, this is much faster than anybody predicted here in 2023, and also affects this conversation we're having about, you know, if you're going to call everybody back, and you're no longer going to allow remote work, that changes the dynamic a little, doesn't it?
Very good. And I love your sort of review of the rapid change. Remember, pre-COVID, 6% of the American workers worked remotely. At the height, 60%+ worked remotely. But, you know, and there is resistance for people coming back to work, and that was sort of tied into quiet quitting, right? But there is great pushback to get back to work and be as productive as possible. The problem is when you've got long COVID in the mix, and one of the accommodations might be, I need to work from home because of, again, health, physical or mental health challenges or fatigue or attending to medical appointments. You might get some legal challenges when the employer says, we're not accommodating that, when you might have otherwise accommodated it for some other illness.
Yeah, I mean, based on that number, that's only 27.5% of telework. And, you know, that's dramatically down from even just a year ago when it was almost 40%.
Yeah. And David, I was a liberal arts major, so I'm going to defer to you on any math and statistics.
And that's okay. I'll let you do that. It's all good. You know, so back to the point of obviously about long COVID and policies, this is a good time to make this review. You mentioned, and I think it's important to point this out, you mentioned about it could be a workers' comp issue. Explain how potentially something that's happened from the pandemic could become a workers' comp issue.
Well, and that's a good point. And some states have actually recognized that as COVID arising in the workplace. Now, that was state by state. If you go back to the early days of the pandemic, there were opinions from state attorney generals that said, because of the nature of the virus, we can't prove it arose in the workplace. The person was infected because it's airborne. Now, remember, in the early days, we're washing our vegetables, our produce, our countertops, and so on. And also early on, it was don't wear a mask unless you're infected. But then it was everyone wear a mask and wear two masks and so on. And again, we're trying to figure this out as we went. But the issue there is workers' comp, as you know, is a medical indemnity and wage replacement for illnesses or injuries that either arise in the workplace or are exacerbated by the workplace. Working conditions. Now, that could be the environment, whatever type of environment we talk about, or it could be that coworker you referenced earlier who doesn't know enough to cover when they cough, you know, and or otherwise, you know, thought I can come to work today, I'm feeling okay, but otherwise infecting the workplace. So early opinions were that it can't be covered by workers' comp because of the causation issues. We don't know that you got it here as opposed to somewhere else. That changed, and many states basically adopted the fact that it could be, COVID could be covered by workers' comp. Now, you'll get insurance carriers that will perhaps fight that because of the causation and cost issues. But so I would argue that potentially a long COVID issue, if it traces back to the original infection or subsequent infection in the workplace, or said another way, what if I have breathing issues or circulatory issues or respiratory issues, more importantly, and it's impacted and exacerbated by my working conditions, it may be covered by workers' comp. And that's something that is probably overlooked in this sort of calculus.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis, and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, the Healthcare Purchase Alliance, Paper Trails, and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetti.
And I'm Pete McVetti from McVetti's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetti's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, "That's rad." It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, David Shulo, and you're listening to Educational HR Radio on the HR Power Hour. Our guest today is Jim Reedy, and he is a partner at Sheehan Finney. And we are talking about long COVID and how you're going to have to deal with this as an employer for the future, and for at least the ongoing scene future. How's that sound, Jim? Because I think that's probably the truth. I don't think this is going away anytime soon.
That's absolutely true.
So what should we do going forward? What, you know, we've talked a lot about the mechanics, the things that could be affected, about policy, about all these areas. But what should we really do at this point? What's the advice going forward?
I think the advice going forward is certainly talking to your employees. I think one thing to remember, David, and I read this article some time ago, and you and I were not around at that time, but in 1917, 1918, the end of the Spanish flu, it took over 4 years for, and it was worldwide, just like this pandemic, to get back to some degree of normalcy. We're in year three of since the beginning of this pandemic, and it's going to take a period of time to get back to some degree of normalcy. So, but in that regard, and if long COVID indeed continues longer than the Spanish flu did, in its residual effect, I think the advice for employers is listen to your employees, understand what you don't have. Remember the ADA, it says it's the accommodation is unique to every individual. The inquiries is unique to every individual and every job. You don't have, this is what we do for back injuries. This is what we do for pregnancy. This is what we do for, you know, carpal tunnel, and so on. It's unique to the individual, unique to the job and circumstances. So listen to the employees and consider their medical information, not just what they might say, well, this is what I think it is, and this is what I found when I looked on WebMD, which my advice is never look on WebMD.
I'm 100% with you on that.
You'll never sleep again. But I think that exchange of medical information, again, appropriately with the employee's consent and treating it as a confidential medical document or information, engage in the interactive process the ADA talks about. And even if you're not covered by the ADA, meaning you don't have 15 or more employees, it's a good idea to have that back and forth. It's basic respect for the employee. But if you're covered by the ADA, to be clear, that interactive process is something that will be looked at for purposes of a defense later. If you make a decision, there is no reasonable accommodation, we can't do this, but we engaged in the process in good faith. That's a good defense. Review with eligible employees the conditions that might qualify for FMLA leave. Again, if you've got 50 or more employees and the person has worked a year, 12 months, and 1,250 hours in that period of time, and they have FMLA time remaining for themselves or care for a family member, what that involves. And that's either block leave, intermittent, or reduced schedule leave, and what the certification is from the healthcare professional, and what job restoration rights are available, if any, and largely they are available, and what the insurance issues are during that period of time, and so on. And then also looking at, when appropriate, offering other types of leave, whether FMLA applies or not, because you may have, as we just mentioned a few minutes ago, extended leave beyond the end of FMLA. And then we also mentioned a few minutes ago the possibility of workers' comp. Just don't dismiss that out of hand as potential coverage. And you might have, again, short-term disability, long-term disability, or other types of paid or unpaid leave available. But having a discussion, having an exchange of information, and making a well-reasoned decision about that individual employee's particular circumstance and what they need.
Of course, there are state rules, there are state regulations and laws. So not forget about those, right? When it comes to paid family medical leave or paid sick leave.
Yeah. And I think, again, HR professionals, you know, whether you're talking about New Hampshire, Maine, Vermont, Massachusetts, and the many states that the HR Power Hour covers, many states adopted during the last couple of years paid family leave policies. As many as 11 or 12 states have adopted paid FMLA under state law. And I think 16 or more states have adopted paid sick leave policies where their states either, where employers in those states didn't have them or they were inadequate. So I think factoring those in as well, the employee could qualify for one or both of those in addition to other things.
So just for clarity, if you're going to request medical documentation, and we know it has to go in a separate file, what's the clear, precise information you should be asking for?
Yeah, so good question. I think you're going to ask about what's the nature of the illness or impairment, its severity and the duration of the impairment. Is this because that factors in? Remember, the guidance from the ADA said even if it's not active at the time, if it's something that it's a chronic illness, that could impact the person at a certain point, and maybe not now, but when active, it could represent a disability. So, and what life activity that impairs, it doesn't have to be work. It could be breathing, walking, eating, sleeping, and so on. And to what extent, and how it impacts the job. And is there a requested accommodation or assistance? You don't have any magic language in that regard. And are there any alternatives? Remember that if the employee and his or her healthcare provider say, this is the accommodation we need, you don't have to adopt it like gospel. You have to say, okay, let's talk about that. And are there any alternatives that which would make more sense in our organization? And then to me, again, the most important question with regard to anything, but certainly long COVID, is how long is this accommodation needed?
And that's the real question, right? Because, you know, does it affect from a cost or financial impact? Does it have an impact on the workforce of the organization? You know, that undue hardship to the organization? And that's the $1 million question, or as you said, the billion in today's world.
Right. And I think that, you know, if you look pre-COVID, I think it was a Seventh Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals said indefinite accommodations, not reasonable. Indefinite accommodations, not reasonable. So that same court looked at this person ended an FMLA leave and needed additional time. And it was, I think it was 6 months. And the court said, you know, the ADA is not a leave statute. The ADA is a medical accommodation statute. So could an extra week, a couple extra days beyond the 12 weeks, could up to a month, could that be a reasonable accommodation? Sure. But indefinite? I can't think of a court that came up with, sure, indefinite is a reasonable accommodation.
Because that's not an accommodation. That's an ongoing, you know, ongoing. It's never ending.
And, right. And the answer is it depends upon the job, depends upon the circumstances, and whether or not the, as you said, the employer determines it to be an undue hardship. So again, it's a unique analysis per individual case, but largely indefinite accommodations, long-term indefinite accommodations may not be reasonable. However, that could change as we deal more and more with long COVID.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Car is a wreck and you don't know where to go.
Take it to Moody's.
You wanna get on with your life, get on with the show.
Take it to Moody's.
Good people you can trust
and it won't be a fuss.
Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
M-O-O-D-Y.
Your kid was talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home. Sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot. Driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe. Put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB and presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Stephen Chulo, and you're listening to Educational HR Radio. Our guest today has been Jim Reedy, and he has been talking about long COVID and how we need to look at it, accommodate it, and what employers should be dealing with and doing at this time. Jim, as we wrap up the show today, you know, we've talked a lot about different things that are affecting employers. Give kind of an overview of what somebody should do today, wrap it up in a nice bow, and then we'll talk a little bit about some upcoming events.
Yeah, you know, there was a clothier in Massachusetts when I was growing up, and his commercial was, I think it was Cy something or other, I can't remember his last name, but as he said, an educated consumer is my best customer. And I think that's certainly true. And the HR Power Hour does a terrific job in that regard. And I think for purposes of applying that to long COVID and what do? Stay educated, stay on top of the issues, whether it's CDC or HHS or your Department of Public Health or programs certainly like this. And with that, review and update your leave policies and your accommodation policies. always a good idea, watching for changes in the law, guidance from EEOC, court cases, and so on. Follow those legal developments in that area and apply them. Don't just assume they apply to some other workplace. Update your job descriptions. Courts give deference to job descriptions, when you, especially if you're dealing with a disability accommodation case. You want to say, these are the essential functions of the job, and identify what they are, and following the guidance from EEOC on how to do that. Engage in that interactive process under the ADA for sure, the back and forth with the employee. Request medical information, certainly, to confirm what is needed and perhaps to navigate the accommodation process. And consider, and you said this earlier, David, and I think it's absolutely true, your organization's culture and past practice. How do you treat your employees? What do you need from your employees? And what do they need from you? Expand supervisor and management training and accountability. It isn't just the fiefdom of the employee, the supervisor, because I said so, because ultimately as an employer, you're responsible for the good and bad actions of your supervisors. And yes, document the process, the interactive process back and forth and attendance and performance, because that could be the tail of the tape later down the road. So I think certainly a lot for employers. You would think that after 3 years of this, we'd be done with it and we can move on. But I think long COVID is going to be with us for a while.
Well, you know, how employers and especially HR and senior leaders treat their people will tell the tale of their ability to retain talent, their ability to find talent, and their ability to have people stay engaged. You know, I remind people all the time that your company name is always going to be with them on their resume. You are always going to be marketing as someone that they have worked for. And so that conversation of how was your last employee or and how was your last XYZ boss is something to think about. And I'm not sure that employers think about the long term of what that really means to have a legacy of someone working for you from that aspect. Jim, you have some great events coming up. One is your annual law review. Tell us a little bit about it, where somebody can get that information if they're looking to go.
Oh, certainly they can go to our website at sheehan.com. They can go to New Hampshire LaborNet, NHLABORNET. And of course, we just changed platforms to Gaggle, and it's been terrific. We've got nearly 2,000 members on that. David, you're a member, and you promote the HR Power Hour on LaborNet. We encourage that. That's an email exchange. It's our 35th annual Labor and Employment Law Update. It's on May 25th. At the Castleton Convention Center at Wyndham, New Hampshire. And you can go to our website to look at that, again, or on LaborNet. And also, I'm going to, for those people that are not necessarily gamblers, but if you want to go to Las Vegas for the SHRM conference in June, I will be there. I'm talking about quiet quitting and long COVID. So look forward to seeing you in Vegas as well.
No, that's going to be great. It's always a good show. You know, I appreciate you being on the show today. I appreciate you sharing this information and knowledge. I think it was incredibly informative, and we really appreciate you at the HR Power as a sponsor and as a guest. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, David.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.